This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Thursday, December 1st of 2022. I'm your host, Jimmy Searfoss. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we'll have the latest installment of our Follow the Waste series. This time we'll learn where the leaves go when they blow. Then on Cannabis Report, longtime cannabis correspondent Leland Rucker brings us more marijuana research results. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour, then it's a public affair. Kitchen Tabletop comes next and brings us Chef Daniel Asher and guests who come into the studio while John Lindorf's going to tune in via video to talk about his favorite topic, pie. Then at 9:30, Ann Catalo will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead this morning, but first, a look at the headlines with KGNU's Claire Purnell.
Secretary of State Jenna Griswold tweeted on Wednesday that Colorado election officials will need to recount results from the Colorado 3rd District race between incumbent Republican House Representative Lauren Boebert and Democratic running mate Adam Frisch. Griswold said in a statement that Colorado voters have made their voices heard, and she is ordering this recount in accordance with Colorado law to confirm the will of the voters. Adam Frisch initially conceded the race for the House seat on November 18th. Colorado state law mandates that election officials recount elections with anything less than a 0.5% margin. Boebert won by a margin of 550, a margin of only 0.3%. According to a tweet from Griswold, the recount will begin on December 13th. Broomfield City Council approved 9 new gun safety ordinances Tuesday evening, pending final approval in a second reading. The city began discussing local gun measures in September, along with other Front Range sites, notably those in Boulder County. The approved ordinances include measures to ban the sale and possession of rapid-fire trigger activators, establish a minimum age of 21 years to purchase a firearm with few exceptions, regulate the possession of so-called ghost guns, restrict open and concealed carry in certain areas, and require a 10-day waiting period and proof of education and competence to purchase firearms. Due to public concerns and strongly divided opinions, Broomfield City Council held 2 study sessions before Tuesday's reading. The approved measures will not take effect unless they pass a second reading scheduled for January. The State Health Department's Air Pollution Control Division is terminating the cease and desist order against Prospect Energy for the company's Krause site. The division issued the order in August 2022, arguing the site's repeated air quality violations posed a risk to public welfare. The cease and desist order required Prospect Energy to follow strict guidelines to analyze the design of its equipment, control emissions to ensure safety at the Krause site, strictly manage its storage tanks, and have an odor management plan. The Air Pollution Control Division will require Prospect Energy to meet certain conditions and conduct additional monitoring when it resumes operations. Governor Jared Polis has declared this week Colorado Wastewater Utility Appreciation Week in recognition of the work performed by over 60 wastewater utilities to establish a statewide COVID-19 monitoring system. Wastewater data has consistently helped in the early identification of COVID-19 disease trends with utility districts. Since 2020, wastewater utilities have been providing samples twice per week to CDPHE's State Public Health Laboratory and have been able to detect community-wide outbreaks before testing data on individuals. Adams County has awarded a multi-million-dollar grant to create and maintain open spaces across the county. KGNU's Luis Lincoln has more.
The Adams County Board of Commissioners, BOCC, this week awarded over $10 million in open space grants to cities and municipalities within its jurisdiction. The funds come from revenue collected under the open space sales tax. Commissioner Lynn Baca said the initiative is part of an effort to provide, quote, valuable spaces which offer comfort and support to people everywhere. Some of the recipients of the grants include Adams County Clear Creek Water Park, the City of Brighton, Commerce City, and more. Voters passed the Adams County Open Space Sales Tax back in 1999. County authorities award funds twice a year. For KGNU, I am Luis Licon.
The City of Boulder expects mountain lion activity to increase this winter as mountain lions head to lower elevations to find food in more populated areas. Mountain lions pose a relatively low risk to humans, but authorities warn to back away slowly if you spot one, and to try to make yourself look big. They also recommend installing outdoor lighting, not leaving pets unattended outdoors, especially at night or in the early morning, supervising children when outdoors, and making your yard less of a mountain lion food court. So removing access to food sources like pets and livestock. The Amtrak Winter Park Express train will return to taking skiers and snowboarders to Winter Park starting in January. It will run every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday starting January 13th until March 26th of 2023. The train will depart at 7 a.m. from Union Station and leave Winter Park at 4:30 p.m. Passengers can carry ski and snowboarding equipment on the Amtrak for free. A high wind warning is in effect for the Front Range Foothills and Palmer Divide beginning tonight. Snowfall will also begin across the high country, and the combination of snowfall and strong winds will have significant travel impacts due to the slick road conditions and reduced visibility. On the first day of December here in Boulder, expect mostly sunny weather with a high near 52 and a low of 35 degrees. In Denver, sunny with a high near 50 and a low of 37, with wind gusts as high as 30 miles per hour later in the evening. In Fort Collins, mostly sunny with a high near 45 and a low near 27. Wind gusts could be as high as 34 miles per hour. For KGNU, I'm Claire Purnell.
You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Jimmy Searfoss. Fallen leaves are a quintessential part of the autumn landscape. Folks with yards have different responses to fallen leaves. Some bag them, others mulch, while others just leaf them be. But where did all those bagged leaves go? Stacy Johnson investigates the fallen leaf journey in this latest installment on KGNU's Follow the Way series.
What would autumn in the Front Range sound like without the raking, grinding, mulching, and blowing of leaves? But what's the best way to manage all those leaves? And where do those bags of yard waste go?
It's important to not landfill organic material. It's kind of my mission, my career.
Charles Kamenitas, Waste Services Manager for the City of Longmont, says leaves should not be sent to a landfill nor left lying about.
A lot of these leaves end up, if they're not picked up, they go into the storm drain and adds pollutants into the storm drain.
Longmont, along with its year-round curbside organics collection program, also provides the opportunity for residents to have their bagged leaves picked up by a contractor who goes through the city's neighborhoods one time in the fall. The city also allows residents to drop off leaves or other yard debris at its waste diversion site. After the contractor sweeps through a Longmont neighborhood to pick up bagged leaves, the contractor then hauls the leaves to the city's waste diversion site and dumps them in a combined mountainous pile, and while doing so, removes any plastic bags, which are then baled and handed over to a nearby plastics recycler. Longmont's Kamenitas explains the next steps.
We partner and work with A1 Organics. This is one of the state's largest composting and organic companies, and we have a contract with them, and we go through and make sure there's no plastics in here. And then we contract with them to haul these to their facility. These will go to Keensburg, Colorado, and they will add this into their composting process with other organic materials, and it gets composted for reuse.
Within the city of Boulder, Western Disposal collects yard waste through its curbside compost collection service. For trucks that haul in the mixed stream of compostable materials to Western's transfer station, it's all dumped into one big mound, also known as the compost tipping area. Kathy Carroll, Community Relations Manager for Western Disposal, explains more.
What you're seeing here is both food waste and yard waste. Most of the volume is yard waste. But when you have in the city of Boulder, and actually in Boulder County too, with Western, we do take food waste and yard waste in the same container.
It then gets loaded into a grinder at the facility to make it more efficient for transportation. As is the case with Longmont, Boulder's organic waste also travels 60 miles away to Keensburg, where A1 Organics handles industrial composting. Both Western Disposal and the City of Longmont also grind and mulch on site the yard waste that is directly dropped off by residents and commercial landscapers throughout the year. This includes not only leaves, but also grass clippings, tree branches, post-holiday Christmas trees, and much more. Western Disposal uses the term source-separated material when referring to the dropped-off yard waste. The mulch that is made from the source-separated material is then offered back to residents and commercial landscapers for their use.
You can see the pile that we have back here. It's almost ready for us to grind and haul away, and we'll do that. It's about 800 tons of material after we grind it.
Longmont's Caminita says they will grind and haul the 800-ton amount of material 6 to 7 times a year. Because Western Disposal also has a large and steady stream of source-separated material, Western's Kathy Carroll explains another use for their mulch.
We have a partnership with a dairy composter more in the northern part of the Front Range, and they're affiliated with feedlots. So they'll buy some mulch, and they'll also buy the wood mulch. And put it down in the pen where the animals are. So in order to make compost, you need carbon and you need nitrogen. So this is the carbon, 100%, and then the manure is 100% nitrogen. So put it down, the nitrogen gets added through the animals, they scoop it up, and they make dairy compost.
For stewards of yards and landscapes that want to go contrary to traditional leaf handling practices, or let's just say, turn over a new leaf, there's also an option of a passive approach.
I would say that the benefits of leaving the leaves fall into three major categories, and I would label those as soil, habitat in the food web, and climate.
That's restoration and conservation ecologist Susan Sherrod of the company Biohabitats explaining the benefits of letting leaves linger.
With respect to soil, the leaves that are left to decompose on the ground can get broken down over time and supplement the soil with organic matter, which every soil needs organic matter, and that's a free source of it. And similarly, as the leaves break down, they add nutrients to the soil underneath. So in that way, they serve as a fertilizer. And the third major benefit from leaving leaves on the ground with respect to soil is that it conserves soil moisture. So trees, which do get thirsty over the wintertime, will get a little bit less thirsty if we leave the leaves where they are.
Sherrod also explains that fallen leaves serve as a major foundation for a food web, as tiny insects, caterpillars, earthworms, and other organisms will dine on the leaves, and as a result, they too will then be a food source for birds and other larger animals.
If leaves are left on the ground, they decompose in place, and yes, it does let off a little bit of carbon dioxide in that process, but it's so much better than sending them to a landfill where they will decompose in anaerobic conditions and outgas methane, which is over 20 times as potent as carbon dioxide.
For yard stewards not ready to bagging leaves, or simply wanting some element of yard tidiness, they may want to consider the method honed in by the ground maintenance crews at the University of Colorado Boulder.
Our goal is to mulch as many of them back into the turf as we possibly can.
That's Scott Redder, main campus grounds manager at CU Boulder.
So quite often we find leaves in places that are in shrub beds or patios, plazas, entryways. We'll even rake those up or blow them out and put them out into the lawns so that a mower can come behind and mulch those in. It just helps neutrify the soil. It acts as a natural fertilizer for the turf.
Redder says their mulching project often results in emails and phone calls from confused passersby.
And they don't realize we're trying to prep them for that mower, right? We have to spread them out. We can't just have a huge mountain of leaves. A mower can't chew that up, right? But looking out of a window or driving by in a car, it looks like absurdity if you don't know what you're looking at. And so we always get a kick out of these emails and these phone calls and stuff that people, you know, let us know about this time of year. It's always interesting.
Just in a general sense of all the leaves that are on the campus grounds, would you say 3/4 get mulched or mowed, or would you say?
I'd say we're upwards of 85 to 90% of them get chewed up and mulched into a turf.
So the answer to where all the Boulder County leaves go depends on how, if, and where they are collected. Some will travel all the way to the A1 Organics facility in Keensburg. Others may be put through grinders and mixed into municipal mulch piles and possibly sent to feedlots to make dairy compost. Some will return to the grassy areas on the CU Boulder campus, and others may blow through the streets and end up in storm drains. No matter their path, they'll all end up in the cycle of life. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
This reporting series was made possible by a grant from Boulder County's Zero Waste Funding Program.
This Thursday, December 1st at 6 p.m., It's the Economy will feature a live interview with the student and faculty leaders of a planned climate strike at the CU Boulder campus on Friday, December 2nd at 12 p.m. We'll also feature a conversation with author and LA Times investigative reporter Sam Quinones on his new book, The Least of Us, True Tales of America and Hope in the Time of Fentanyl and Meth. All that on It's the Economy this Thursday, December 1st at 6 p.m. on KGNU Community Radio.
And now it's time for the Cannabis Report here on KGNU Community Radio. I'm Hanalee Myers, and I'm joined here by Leland Rucker, longtime cannabis correspondent. Leland, thanks for being here with us.
Always good to be here.
Okay, so here on the Cannabis Report, we have a love-hate relationship with research, and we're going to bring you more of it. We love it. It's what we need right now to figure things out. We're glad to have it. But Leland's going to help us kind of sift through some of this research today. So explain some of what we know. We're now 10 years into cannabis legalization here in Colorado, and we're looking at some of like these bigger picture trends that we're now starting to figure out both here in Colorado and across the country. And what are you seeing from some of these new reports and studies and how they're done and all of that?
Well, to start it off, how many times have you walked into a dispensary and at least overheard, or maybe you even said, the one with the highest THC content, that's the one I want? And, you know, bud tenders are not immune to this. It's bud tenders that have told me these stories about people that come in and they put their hand on the table and they say, I want the one with the biggest THC content. And there's a new study out that says perhaps that's not the reason that most people wind up buying what becomes their favorite strain. It might be the aroma rather than the THC content. This was a recent study, so you know, you take it with a grain of salt, but it involved cannabis researcher Dr. Ethan Russo. And here it says the goal of this study was to characterize the subjective effects of phytochemically rich, commercially available cannabis cultivars in blinded, healthy adults. Okay? And they noted that an unbiased evaluation of the subjective effects of cannabis inflorescence allowed us to examine the relative contributions of chemotype and aroma to subjective desirability. Now, that's getting way out there.
So is that essentially just saying, like, when the bud tender in a dispensary holds the jar to your nose and you smell one and then you smell another and you have kind of like, oh, I don't like that, and oh, I like this, that is your brain telling you what, that you might like or enjoy the effects of one more, is the assumption?
The study's saying that it suggests that.
Huh.
That maybe it's the aroma rather than the THC content that really gets people. And the study makes clear that this is mostly for people who use cannabis on an irregular basis, maybe once a week. And but I still find this fascinating. I've never thought of cannabis use in this way. I've never, you know, having bought it illegally for so many years, you don't really care about the smell.
That's interesting, too, that this is related to the terpenes conversation, correct?
Yeah, it ultimately is. But the results support using aroma as the primary criterion in assessments of product quality. And there's a reason for this, and they say that it de-emphasizes the market value of high THC products. And there is a higher, you know, people want that high THC and they're willing to pay more for it. And so it would allow cannabis consumers to smell the flower rather than go for the THC content. And it would diversify the regulated retail marketplace to include a variety of lower THC products. So it's not saying the THC, you know, get rid of all the THC. but it just says it might have public health benefits by minimizing this THC as the primary driver of market demand. And as the study says, reducing the risks associated with THC overconsumption. Hmm. So, you know, possibility. The study doesn't say this is what we know. It just says this is what we found.
It's interesting, too, that we've now seen studies coming out saying that what is labeled as a sativa or an indica or might have a name on it that's like juicy fruit or something, that the same juicy fruit might be totally different from one dispensary to another. So I think we've seen some studies, and we've talked about that here on the show, about reliance on some of those names and some of those classifications might not be the best way to go. You might get something different every time and thinking you're getting the same thing. So maybe smell's the way to go.
From a consumer's point of view, they're just looking for the, you know, what suits them the best.
Uh-huh.
You know, finding that might take a little time. It just might take a little time.
Maybe follow your nose. Maybe it might not be the name. Don't stick with the name of what you know, if you like Golden Goat, maybe you don't stay diehard Golden Goat everywhere you go. Every time you get it, you go with what your nose says, is what this study is saying.
That's
maybe,
exactly. Maybe. It says maybe. Yeah, maybe. It says maybe, you know, maybe it's the aroma rather than the THC content. I thought that was funny because we're always talking about THC content. You know, some of these concentrates are 90% THC content.
I've heard buntenders call that the race to the bottom. That they think that people coming in and just trying to get the strongest thing they can possibly get is bad for them and probably bad for the industry too. Race to the bottom.
And perhaps it's people who are tourists too. And there are less tourists in Colorado because there are a lot of states that are legalizing around Colorado.
Yeah.
When 10 years ago, there were no states abutting Colorado that had legalized.
Huh. What else you got for us?
Well, you know, this is another study, and it's gotten plenty of headlines, a lot of headlines. And I'm not against studies that leave marijuana in an unflattering light. I mean, they're studies. We're trying to find out what's going on. But the study says in a cross-sectional study of 4.2 million adults, that's a lot, in all 50 states from 2010 to 2019, recreational cannabis laws were associated with a 0.9 percentage point increase in any alcohol use among the population overall, but not in binge or heavy drinking. And results were primarily determined by younger adults, 18 to 24 years old, and men, which had a higher percentage point than that 0.9. Now, 0.9 is less than 1%. I don't think that's really telling us much of anything. 1% is, tens of thousands of people, but I don't think that's really telling us much. And among men living in 10 states in the District of Columbia, where recreational marijuana was legal by 2019, alcohol use increased by 1.4%. Binge drinking spiked by about 1%. Again, they suggest that increased alcohol use may be an unintended consequence of recreational cannabis laws, but it doesn't tell us much. Now, I'm not a big fan of cross-sectional studies. That's what this one is. It analyzes existing data. In other words, they're not going out getting the information. They're looking at information that they've already gotten. And when the findings suggest that something may be an unintended consequence, I get skeptical.
It's interesting to talk about and think about. Maybe there could be something else going on there, but it's hard to isolate, I imagine.
You know, if it were a 10% increase or a 5% increase, I might start thinking, okay, maybe there is a connection here. But a 1% increase just seems like you want to do more research.
Hey, and we're open to that, all about that. We're just here to talk about it. So yeah, positive, negative for cannabis. We're just glad to have some research and glad to dig into it. That's a new thing. We welcome that.
And then, you know, like, for instance, a headline on this study was, study links marijuana legalization with increased alcohol usage. No, it doesn't. And those are the kind of headlines that I'm seeing with this.
As a journalist, I understand how that headline could be produced. I get it. But I do see how that's problematic.
Well, you know, just a word of advice. Be skeptical of everything that you read. We were talking about this earlier. You know, put it into Google, put it into your search engine, and find out whether there's other stories like this. I mean, be skeptical of everything, especially things that you disagree with or things that you agree with. be skeptical of what you're reading, because we're going to have a lot of studies like this. You know, there might be a study that says, you know, that if people smoke marijuana, they use less alcohol. Who knows? So be skeptical.
And we're happy to keep bringing you these reports as they come out here in Colorado and elsewhere. And Leland, as always, we are grateful to have you digging into them with us.
Oh, it's fun.
You can find the Cannabis Report here on KGNU the first and third Thursday of every month. For KGNU, I'm Hanley Myers.
That is all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Jimmy Searfaw. Special thanks to Claire Parnell, Luis Lacone, Alexis Kenyon, Stacey Johnson, Hannah Lee Myers, Leland Rucker, and Shannon Young for their contributions to today's program. A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, call us at 303-447-9911. We play messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25 during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for Kitchen Table Talk. That's coming up after these new headlines from the BBC.